I know we've got a number of people missing this morning. Many of our sisters are missing out at Rio Dosa, and several other members are out there with Brother Stephen Bloyd. They're having a special service out there. Brother Kenny said they're trying to get some other churches going in New Mexico. We're down to only about two or three now, and so we're glad to see them doing that effort, and I give Brother Stephen a lot of credit and for the work that he puts in doing that. Appreciate both prayers this morning, the one we opened up with, and then Brother Dwayne's sincere prayer a moment ago, and I stand in need of your prayers. I want to talk to you this morning, if the Lord will be with us, from the book of Joshua. We're in the Old Testament. The book of Joshua is the sixth book from the front of the Bible. You got the five books of Moses: Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Those are the five that Moses wrote, called the law. Next book after that is the book of Joshua. I want to read one line and then we'll come back to it a little later. But Joshua chapter 10, verse 14, Joshua is in the middle of a battle. And the comment is made here, "And there was no day like that before it or after it." There was no day like that day, ever. I want to back up and talk about and what caused them to say that. You know, sometimes that somebody will be coming home, you know, perhaps a husband or wife will be coming home from work, and, you know, you may make the comment, "Well, how was your day?" You know, the comment is, "Boy, this was the longest day I can remember." You know, it's a bad day when you have a long day. You know, and that's usually how we'll refer to it, about, "Gosh, that was a long, long day." And we say it in a derogatory manner, or a manner that it means that we had trouble during the day. We had a movie one time called The Longest Day. It was a war movie. I believe it was about the D-Day invasion, Longest Day. I want to talk to you about the longest day, the actual one. It's in the book of Joshua, and it's well known. It's the one time in the Bible it's referred to it, and again, as the Lord said, never been another day like it since, and never will be another day like it. The day was extended in time for Joshua when he was in battle. He asked the Lord to stop the sun in the sky, and the Lord did it. And we had one day that lasted almost, and you know, when they think of normal 24-hour day, we had one day that lasted almost 48 hours, almost 2 days in length, we're told in the scriptures. Never been a day like it. Never will be another day like it. A lot of people who believe in the miracles in the Bible, they'll read about this one, they'll say, "Well, now I don't believe that one because that would throw too much out of whack. That'd throw all the planets, the stars, everything out of whack to try to stop the earth for a day because it's all set in rotation and you can't do that." So they won't believe that. And they'll say, "Well, they believe in God and they'll believe in some of the miracles that were done, but they don't believe this one because this would throw too much off." So it's challenged a lot and questioned a lot as to whether this actually was a day in which the sun stayed still in the sky. And they'll first of all tell you, "Well, sun doesn't stay still. I mean, the sun didn't stay still in the sky. It doesn't move across the sky." We all know that the sun stays still and the earth rotates around the sun and then it spins on its axis, and that's how we talk about sunset and sunrise and moonrise and moonset. We know in a science environment, that doesn't really happen. We know it's the earth rotating, and those planets are staying where they are. The sun doesn't move, in the solar system. It stays locked in place. I've got a son who is a major in aerospace engineering. He's working in engineering right now, but he used to visit with him and talk to him, and he and I got a chance to visit the Space Center in Kennedy together one time. And first time we went, he was a small child, 9 or 10 years old, and I was having to explain to him all the basic things. You know, this is where the rocket ship takes off. Real complicated training I was giving him. Here's the where they shoot it off, and here's where they build it inside this building. We went back a couple years ago, and he and I went together, and he explained everything to me in quite a bit more detail. But one of his projects he had to do to graduate was he and several of his classmates had to get together and form a team, and they had to give the plan for sending a spaceship to some far-off planet. And to do that, you don't have enough fuel to get there. And so the way you do it is you get enough fuel to fly to the moon, you circle the moon, and then you let it sling you out, and you go to the next planet, and you circle it, and you let it sling you out to the next one. And that's how they move along on these is, of course, there's no friction in space. So once you get to going, you know, 1,000 miles an hour, you keep going that. There's nothing going to stop you. So you use these planets, the gravitational force of these planets, to sling you. You know, it's an easy concept. Put a rock inside a slingshot, you know, and then when you let it go, the rock's not moving. It's the slingshot that's moving, but when you release it, that rock, because of the centrifugal force, will take off. And that's the same way they do. But they count on, to do that, they absolutely have to count on all the stars, all the planets staying in their place, staying on their proper course. That's one of the proven things of fact is that those things don't change. The Earth is on a specific rotation. The sun is. The stars are. They plot them all the time. That's how they can shoot someone to the moon and bring them back. It's because they know where the moon's going to be when they get there, and they know where the Earth's going to be when it gets here. They know exactly how much force they'll have when they're slung off the Earth's orbit. It's all set in space and locked in. And that's when people say, well, this could never have happened. The sun could never have stopped like that, because we know the sun didn't actually stop. What happened was the Earth quit rotating. The Earth just stopped rotating, and we had a long day. And I said, well, that couldn't have happened. People say that, actually, will say, well, but they do believe in God. Well, let's go back to Genesis 1. Genesis 1 said, the Lord created the heavens and the earth, and on the first day, he said, let there be light. And there was light. Now, he didn't create the sun till the fourth day. Sun wasn't created until the fourth day, and we had light all that time. How did he do that? How did we have light without having a sun? He had light, and he worked the first 3 days with the light he created. He didn't create the sun until the fourth day, and he said he created the sun, he created the moon, he created all the stars, and set them into place. If you're willing to believe that, and I am, on faith, I believe that, I don't have any trouble believing the Lord could stop the sun in mid-sky. Let's go back and let's look at this. Let's see what took place this day, because this is one of the miracles. It's one of the great miracles of the Bible in the Old Testament. One of the last miracles before the time of Elijah and Elisha. We had three sets of miracles in the Bible during the time of Moses and carried into Joshua. And this was one of the great ones. Then we had the time of Elijah and Elisha, the miracles they did, especially resurrecting lives and things. And then we had the miracles in the time of Christ. There's three time periods in the Bible that we had miracles. This was the last one of the Moses era, that time frame in which miracles were performed. First of all, who was Joshua? Well, he wrote the book of Joshua. That's the easy part. Joshua was the man who led the Israelites into the invasion of Israel, into the Holy Land. Remember, the Lord had come and told Abraham back then, we're going to have a land for you someday, and went through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Jacob had 12 sons, you know, and one of his sons was Joseph, and Joseph went to Egypt, was sold by his brothers into slavery in Egypt, and that's how all the Israelites ended up in Egypt. Jacob brought all his family down there. The Lord located them in the land of Goshen, separated them apart from the Egyptians in the land of Goshen, a part of Egypt outside of the main cities there. We know that Moses then was called to lead the people out of Egypt. And Moses then would die before he would ever get back into the promised land, before he led this great exodus. But he would die and not be allowed to return to the promised land. But his chief military commander, Joshua, is the one that led the people into the Holy Land and had to fight all these battles for them. And so that's who Joshua is. He led the invasion. Remember, we've talked about this before, the invasion of Jericho. He helped them invade Jericho. If you read, see where he rose to prominence, was back under Moses when Moses led the people out of Egypt, and they were in the out in the wilderness going through there. And before they started getting ready to invade the promised land, Moses says, let's send spies in and do some reconnaissance, as they call it. Let's go in and look over and come back and tell us what it's like and what we need to do to go in and defeat them. And so Moses picked one person out of each one of the tribes of Israel, 12 tribes. He spent 12 spies up into the Holy Land. And they went and stayed probably several months. Didn't say exactly, but they came back out. And Moses asked them what it was like, and they said, boy, it is really a land of milk and honey. This is a great place. There's no question the Lord has blessed this area for us, and it's a land of milk and honey, and they grow crops there. They grow cattle there. They said they brought out grapes. They had to carry them on a board between them, a limb between them. The grapes were so heavy, and they talked about how wonderful the fruit was. But 10 of the spies says, but there's little problems. Everybody lives up there in fortified cities. There's no way we can invade and beat them. Not only that, they've got giant people up in there. These were the sons of Amnek, I believe, which was the ones in which the giants descended that Goliath came from and that David eventually would kill. But they said they got giant people up there, big people. They all look like linemen for the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, they're huge. There's no way we can beat them. We're not battle-tested. We're just people that have escaped from Egypt. We were common laborers there, and we're not battle-tested, and there's no way we can win. Out of those 12 spies, one by one, all 10 of them said, it's great, but there's no way we can win. Two of them said, wait a minute. One named Caleb, and the other one was a young man named Joshua. And they said, if the Lord says we can win, we can win. We shouldn't discount it. It's great and looks good. And yeah, the cities are walled and they look tough. But if the Lord's on our side, look what he's already led us through. He's already led us through, divided the waters and killed all the Egyptians, you know, and led us this far. They had faith. Well, the Lord, we know, punished those 10 spies that went against him, didn't believe, didn't have the faith, and they eventually died. Not only that, he said he was going to, his judgment was on the rest of the people of Israel who believed those 10. And so he made them wander for 40 years in the desert. That's where the 40 years in the wilderness. Not a one of them would able to see the Holy Land. There'd be their kids and their generations after them would see the Holy Land, except for Caleb and Joshua. Joshua, that's where he first became. He was a believer when he was a very young man. And now 40 years later, let's assume he was 20 or a little younger. That means now he's 60. When they come in to the promised land. They're coming in to the promised land, and that's where Joshua begins. The book of Joshua begins. You know, and one of the things that they did when they came in was they had to start defeating and winning all these battles. They had to remember they started with the Battle of Jericho. We're not going to get into today. I've talked about that before in the Battle of Ai, and they had to go around and defeat all the Canaanites who were in those lands. A lot of people say, you know, that was really unfair. It was unfair for the people of Canaan. You know, what did they do wrong? You know, that's a common thought. What did they do wrong that caused all the Israelites to have the right to come in and oust them off the land and kill them? And we know many times that's what got Saul in trouble. He didn't kill all the enemy like he was supposed to, and that caused him trouble. When they didn't do exactly what the Lord commanded, the Lord came in and says, I want you to kill them all, cast them off the land, get them out of the land, get them out of there. And people go, that's not fair. You know, it's kind of like they say the way the Americans treated the Indians. You know, we just went over and took over their land and kicked them out. Well, first of all, let's start and say, let's don't feel sorry for the Canaanites. I want you to go back with me, those who have your Bibles open, go back with me to Leviticus chapter 18. Leviticus chapter 18 is one of the books that Moses wrote when they were in the wilderness. In this 40-year time frame, when they were out in the wilderness, the Lord gave them all sorts of instructions. Set up the tabernacle. Here's how you're going to worship. Here, dedicate the priests out of the tribe of Levi. They're going to be your preachers. The Lord gave them all these instructions, and that's what the law is. All those, Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, that's where the Lord gave them all sorts of directions, and they had lots of experiences and teachings there, but he gave them a lot of laws. But over here in Leviticus chapter 18, he gave them specific instructions about the moral issues of that day. The Lord spoke unto Moses, and he said, tell this to the people of Israel. Verse 3, after the doings of the land of Egypt, you're coming out of Egypt. That's where they just came from. That's where they've been dwelling for 300 or 400 years. And they the Lord had them separate in the land of Goshen, and they prospered. But he said, after the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein ye dwell, shall ye not do. Don't take any Egyptian customs with you. Don't take anything the Egyptians did with you. Don't do that. And he says, and after the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do. Don't do like the people of Egypt, where you come from, and do not do like the people of Canaan, where you're going to. Whither I bring you, shall ye not do, neither shall ye walk in their ordinances. I don't want you to be anything like the culture of the Egyptians where I brought you out of and saved you from. I don't want you to be anything like the people in the land of Canaan where I'm sending you to. Okay, we won't adopt your culture. And he goes, no, it's worse than that. I want you to kick them off the land. I want you to kill them. I want you to remove them. You're going, whoa. I don't know. That's not me. I'm not like that. I can't do that. Let me ask you this. If you had here in Lubbock, if you had some property, owned some property, and you own a couple of rent houses, maybe a rent house, and you think, I like that rental income. I like that. I've had some of that, and it's problems too. But, a lot of people have rent income, and they do well with it and do good with it. And it always works well if you got good tenants. Well, what if I came to you and said, hey, you know, this rent house you got over here, you need to go check on the people that are in it. They're doing a lot of drinking. They're partying. They're selling drugs. They're having a lot of incestuous sexual relations with each other, with their parents, with their kids. They're having cultic worship services going on in there, and they're killing little kids, and they're killing each other, and they're sacrificing their children live to the fire, and they're doing all sorts of cultic worship services inside there. They're killing each other. They're having totally immoral relationships with all sorts of family members, and they're partying and doing drugs, everything you can think of. What would you say then? I'd say, I need to evict those people out of my house. When you realize what was taking place in the land of Canaan, then you see what the Lord's issues were, and he's about to tell us. He said, you shall walk in my judgment, keep my ordinances. I am the Lord. None of you shall approach to any that is near of kin to him to uncover their nakedness. I am the Lord. And he goes here and he starts telling us, and I've preached on this before here, about the curse of nakedness when we have nakedness experience with people it's not supposed to be experienced with. And not only this talking about nakedness, this is talking about improper sexual relations. We'll be a little candid here this morning. And he goes through here from verse 6 through verse 20, and he lays out all the issues of nakedness that are cursed between all sorts of relationships. And he's talking not just about nakedness, he's talking about sexual relations among these people. And here's who he covers. Let me give you a summary real quick. The incestuous tribe relationships, verses 6 to verse 20. Mothers with their mothers, with their stepmothers, with their grandmothers, with their neighbor's wife, with their sisters, with their daughters, granddaughters, half-sisters, aunts, daughter-in-laws, mother's wife, the mothers and your father's wife, your brother's wife, stepdaughters, step-granddaughters, sisters-in-laws, every possible relationship just about that exists, because he talks about even with the neighbor's wife. So every possible situation is condemned as regard nakedness and sexual relations. Of course, this is what I preached on before. The one that's left out is between a husband and wife. That's the one relationship that is blessed. That's the one relationship where the Lord encourages that, encourages the intimacy that comes from that and the sexual relations that come from that. But he condemns all the rest of them all the way through verse 20. He gives verse 21, and he condemns the practice of Molech, which is cultish worship, where people sacrifice their children to fire and they cut themselves and they get into all these cultic type worship services. This is where you get into the horoscopes and all the palms readings and all that kind of stuff and all the worshiping of satanic worship that we even still see today. He said, that's going on. And that's verse 21, where you're throwing live children to fire. Verse 22, and thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. He's talking about homosexuality relations. Verse 23, neither shalt thou lie with any beast. They're having sex with animals, bestiality. And he said, defile not yourselves in any of these things, for in all these the nations are defiled, which I cast out before you. That's what's going on in the land of Canaan. That's what's taking place in the land of Canaan right now. They are defiling my rent property. They are defiling my land. I want them out. Just like you would do if someone was doing that in a piece of your rent property. He said, these are not good people that are there. What they're doing is an abomination to the moral laws of the Lord. I want them out. Look what he says in verse 25. And the land is defiled. Therefore, I do visit the iniquity thereof upon it. I see what's going on. I know it, and I'm passing judgment on it. And the land itself vomited out her inhabitants. That's the word, Lord's word for eviction. Land's going to vomit out those people. I want them out of there. They're not good people. They're killing their children. They're killing cult practices. They're doing all sorts of immoral practices going on. If you go back and read the history, if you study this, the history, it says at that time, these cult practices, homosexual immoral practice, bestiality, it says that was being practiced by the Hittites, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, all the Canaanites. Remember the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, which took place back in Abraham's day. It's just that bad what's going on over there in Canaan. That's the reason the Lord destroyed it in Sodom and Gomorrah. And he says, now it's going on the land. That's who I want out of there. I don't want you going in there and intermingling with those, because then you're going to be caught up in it. He knows this pretty well. He knows our human nature. You're going to get caught up in it really well. And that's what he's telling them. He said, don't do this. In verse 27, for all these abominations have the men of the land done. They have done these things, which were before you, and the land is defiled. He tells us here several places in here about, in these next few chapters I'm not going to go into today, but he said these are bad people there. They're immoral people. I mean, immoral of the worst kind. We're not talking about new people. I mean, he said we used to talk about, when we get over later on, about it being pagan practices. That's what we're talking about with pagan. All these type of immoral practices. They had no moral code at all. And they had all sorts of incestuous sexual relationships within the family in these cult deals, where they would sacrifice live people to fire. You know, and they had all sorts of partying and drugs and everything that you can possibly imagine. He said, you got to keep yourself separate from that. And going in, I want you to remove yourself from that, separate yourself from them, and drive them off the land. And that's what I'm going to help you do. And that's what when he sends Joshua across the Jordan River into the Holy Land, that's the people that he's fixing to go in battle with. Now, don't feel sorry for the Canaanites. There are people that defiled the land of the Lord and what they were doing and what they're practicing. Let's go now back to Joshua and let's talk about it. Let's go back to the first part of Joshua. I want to summarize it real quickly before we get into what happened that day. Joshua comes through, and first of all, in chapter 1, he has to make preparations to going into the land. First thing he does, he turns to the Lord. And he tells him about, I've got to go over there. And look what the Lord tells him in verse 5. There shall not be any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so will I be with thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. That's the promise the Lord made to Joshua going in. And he said, Joshua, you're the one that's going to lead the people in there and clean up this mess that's there in the Holy Land. It's a mess. It's, you know, we don't like to talk these things. We certainly like to speak of it in Sunday. Here at Sunday in our church building, I don't like some of the words I've been using. I don't like to use in a room this large. I feel uncomfortable doing it. But you need to understand. I hear people say, you know, I've heard people say, well, that was really kind of rough. The people of Canaan, did they deserve that kind of treatment? Yes, they did, according to the Lord's judgment. He made a judgment on them. Remember, this is the same Lord that sent his own son for us, for his children. We got a loving, caring God. But he passed his judgment on violation of his immoral laws. In chapter 2, it's where he sent spies into Jericho, across the river and into Jericho to spy on Jericho. And we know that that's where Rahab the harlot helped them be safe and stay safe. And she was the only one eventually spared. Chapter 3, they actually crossed the Jordan. You remember they crossed the Jordan, and when they put their foot in the Jordan with the Ark of the Covenant, the water stopped. Just like it divided the Red Sea, the water stopped as they stepped into the Jordan River. And chapter 4 talks about where Joshua set up 12 stones. Y'all remember I preached on that. I stacked up 12 stones here on top of the stands about what those means. Lord gives us monuments for us to remember from time to time, like this Bible he's given us to remember. He goes over, and of course he defeats Jericho in chapter 5 and chapter 6. He did that with the Lord's help. You know, they marched around the city. And tell me, how good a fighter do you have to be when all you got to do is march around the city with a lantern and a trumpet and be able to sing? That's how the Lord helped them defeat Jericho. The walls fell flat after they marched around the city. You'll see that. One thing he told them to do, though, when you go into Jericho, what I do not want you doing is associating yourself with the people that are there. Just like I didn't want you intermingling with those Egyptians, I certainly don't want you intermingling with these Canaanites. Don't take anything that they have. Don't keep it. If you go in there and try to get some of their sacred idols and whatever, then that's going to make you an idolater too. He tells them this in, in chapter 6, verse 18, when they were about to attack Jericho, he said, "And ye in any wise keep yourselves from the accursed thing, lest ye make yourself accursed." Stay away from everything that they practice and everything they do. If you go into Jericho and see some altar, some they've set up, something they're worshiping, stay away from it. You're going to wind up getting pulled into that, and you'll be accursed too. And he said, so don't keep anything. When you take of the accursed thing and make camp of Israel, a curse and trouble it. If you try to take any, a lot of times when you go in battle, soldiers are well known when they go into battle, they take some of the bounty they get. They'll take the rings and some of the, jewelry and some of the furniture, the holdings. That's been known historically forever. Historically, all soldiers have done that, taken some kind of bounty, some kind of trophy, a gun, something with them. The Lord says, don't do that. Don't take any of it. Anything you collect is going to be for the Lord. You would collect the silver and the gold and melt it down and we'll use it, but don't take anything for yourself personally. And we know there was this one man, I can't pronounce his name, Achan, A-C-H-A-N, Achan, who did. He took some silver and gold and went back and buried it under the floor of his tent. And of course, when the nation of Israel tried to attack Ai, that they got defeated and beat and lost a lot of men. And Joshua couldn't figure out why they lost. After they'd won the great battle at Jericho, why they went and lost at Ai. And it came to him that they had violated God's law and someone had taken something. They figured out it was Achan, and he was actually had to face the death penalty because of that. Then they went back and won Achan and won it immediately. Captured it in chapter 8 and won it immediately. And then you get over to chapter 9 and you see that all the other cities, every city in Canaan at that time in the Holy Land was a walled city, had a fortress of the outside. They could totally shut it off and protect themselves from the outside world. It's just like Jerusalem, all the cities were built that way. And there were six main cities over there that they had to go defeat. Joshua was having to go defeat them. Now, we know the Lord can win those just like he did Jericho. It was a walled city, and the walls came tumbling down because of the Lord's help. Well, there was these walled cities that was hard to win against, but Joshua knew that's what his job was, and he had to do it. One of the main cities was the city of Gibeon, and every city had a king. It's like what we might call a mayor, but they called them kings then. They were the king, and they were the head of the government of each one of those cities, and they called them states, effectively. They were like a state, a city-state. Every one of them were that way. And the first one they had was Gibeon. And Gibeon got to looking and saying, word spread wide about Joshua and how he had won at Jericho and how he'd eventually won at Ai. And the word spread, and the Gibeons got scared and said, even though we're his enemy, he's going to attack us. So they devised a plan to trick the Israeli people. They put on old clothes, got old food, and marched across 23 miles to Gilgal, right outside of Jericho, where Joshua was encamped. And they said, we come from a far country. They only came 23 miles away. But they told Joshua, we came from a far country, and we're afraid the people are going to kill us, and we want to make a peace treaty with you. Well, Joshua and them felt sympathy for them. They looked, they were wearing old clothes, and they were had food that was moldy. And they said, okay, we believe these people's story. These people were lying to them. Well, they later found out that they had lied to them, and so Joshua said, well, then you're going to be the service. You're going to serve us the rest of our lives. He didn't kill them, but he said, you're going to serve us. And those Gibeonites became servants to the Israeli people for the rest of their lives. You can go read in the temple worship, these old Gibeonites, they help haul wood, they help haul water, they help clean up. They were servants for the rest of their lives, but they sacrificed their freedom. They became bondsmen. They sacrificed their freedoms to have their lives saved. And the Lord honored that, and Joshua honored that. Now we get over to chapter 10, and this is where we are. See, it came to pass when Adonizedek was a descendant of Melchizedek. Melchizedek was the great priest of Salem, which was Jerusalem. Now, King of Jerusalem. He's now inherited. He's the king of Jerusalem, the head of Jerusalem. He had heard about how Joshua had taken Ai and had utterly destroyed it, as he had done to Jericho and her king also, as he had done to Ai and her king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made a peace with Israel. He said, boy, Joshua has destroyed Jericho and Ai. And now one of our friendly cities, 6 miles away, Jerusalem was 6 miles south of Gibeon. And now my friend up here at the city, they went over and made a peace treaty with him and have joined the other side, made the king of Jerusalem mad. So he said, I tell you what we're going to do. There's 5 more of us cities left. And he picked up all of these are south of Jerusalem. This is the southern campaign. He said, there's the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon. He said, y'all come together. Let's get together and let's form an alliance. That's the only way we're going to beat this Joshua. We can't be independent. You know, they were probably enemies of each other, generally, not fighting enemies, but jealous of each other. But politics makes strange bedfellows. All these kings says, we got to come together. That's the only way we can beat Joshua. We've already lost Gibeon. They've traitors. They've gone over and be on Joshua's side and become slaves to him just to keep from being beat. Verse 5, therefore the 5 kings of the Amorites, king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon, gathered themselves together and went up, and they camped Gibeon and made war against it. They totally circled the city of Gibeon, who just made this peace treaty with Joshua, and Joshua had promised to protect them. And so the men of Gibeon, in verse 6, sent a note to Joshua and said, we're in trouble. You got to come and help us. You promised you'd come and help us. We're on your side. But now we are totally surrounded by these 5 kings and all their armies. He said, please hurry. We're in real trouble. Verse 7, so Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him. And if you go down here and look in verse 9, and it says, Joshua therefore came unto them suddenly and went up from Gilgal all night. Joshua drove his army 23 miles in the dead of night. Uphill, ascended. It's an uphill climb. They had to climb some hills to get there. Joshua didn't waste any time getting there. 23 miles, it's normally about a day and a half trip for most times. Joshua did it overnight, which is probably 8 or 9 hours. These men marched all night long. But before he marched with his men and his army to get there to save Gibeon, he did one thing. He said, Lord, I need help. And look what the Lord told him in verse 8. And the Lord said unto Joshua, fear them not. Go up there and take on. Now, these 5 kings didn't realize that they just done Joshua and the Lord a great favor. Joshua was going to have to go to these individual 5 cities and defeat them all. Now all those 5 kings had gotten together. They're there in one group. Joshua can attack them all at one time. He can wrap up one shore in one battle. The Lord said unto them, fear them not, for I have delivered them into thy hand. Now, wait a minute, Lord, I'm not the Gibeon yet. And the Lord's talking in past tense. Battle's already over. Go up there, Joshua. I have delivered them to my hand. Now, Joshua, though, look, the Lord's promised him a win. But Joshua gets his men together and hustles, and they do double time. Because, you know, they're not all on horses. This is the nation of Israel. They do double time to get there overnight going uphill. My dad used to say, I remember he used to tell me that, if you want your prayers answered, you got to get off your knees and go to work. You got to pray, but you got to do the work too. You see, Brother Kenny and Brother Gale, they don't just pray to the Lord, Lord, bless me and make me preach. They study. Then they get up here and ask the Lord to help them preach. You study because that's what you're supposed to do to prove yourself you're worthy to be here. But then you also got to get up and do the work, and that's when you ask the Lord to bless you. But you got to pray, and you got to follow it up with work. Faith without works is dead, as we know over in James. That's what Joshua did. He was a man of action. He prayed the Lord. The Lord said, they're already yours, but go get them. I want you to got to follow through. And so Joshua did it. He went overnight, hurried and got his men. They had to be exhausted. But Joshua, verse 9, Joshua therefore came unto them suddenly and went up from Gilgal all night. He came up suddenly, caught them off guard. Joshua ambushed 5 kings with all their armies. He caught them off guard and ambushed them. Now look at verse 10. Now look at who's doing the fighting. And the Lord discomfited the Amorites. It was the Lord that discomfited them. Now he went up there and Joshua's got them all surrounded. It said the Lord discomfited them before Israel and slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon. Now the Lord's done all the warring so far. Not Joshua. Now Joshua's doing what he was supposed to do. And chased them all along the way that goeth up. Some of them went north, up to Beth Horon and smote them to Azekah and to Makkedah. And that's south. Now they went different directions, but the Lord's chasing them, it says. The Lord's chased them. Now look, and it came to pass as they fled from Israel and were going to Beth Horon that the Lord cast down great stones from heaven upon them, and they died. There were more which died with hailstones than they were with the children of Israel that killed them with the sword. The Lord killed more of the enemies with hail than Joshua did with the sword going after them. The Lord fought the battle. The Lord said, battle's already over. And you notice, says he, a lot of them fled north, a lot of them fled south. I'm sure Joshua's got his people following them too. It's hailing on everybody. Hailstones are only hitting the enemy. They're only killing the Amorites, the five kings and all their armies of Amorites. The Lord's killed more with his hailstones than Joshua had to with the sword as he chases them out. Then Joshua spake unto the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered the Amorites before the children of Israel. He said, Lord, it's getting late in the day, and we still got a lot of people we hadn't captured yet. If it gets dark, they're going to hide from me, and we can't find them. That's what he's saying. Lord, it's late. I need help. Look at this. And Joshua spake to the Lord. He's talking to the Lord, and he does it in front of all the people. And he said in the sight of Israel, all the people watching him, and he stands up, prays to the Lord, and he said, Son, stand thou still upon Gibeon. Stop the sun. We need the daylight to finish our work. Stop the sun before Gibeon, and thou moon in the valley of Alahan. That's the valley that's just next where they were chasing a bunch of men to. He said, what he's doing is stop the sun, stop the moon. Don't let the sun go down. Don't let the moon come up. Stop both of them. And the sun stood still. The sun stood still. The moon stayed until the people had avenged themselves upon their enemies. Is it not written in the book of Jasher? Now, written in the book of Jasher, Jasher was a book of state poems, as they call it. The nation of Israel had a book of poems. The book doesn't exist anymore. But this is confirmation. It's something that man wrote down that this incident took place. And if you'll go look in a... there's another place where it is, and I'll find it later. It's in 2 Samuel, where they also refer to the book of Jasher. So it existed. It was a Jewish historical book of poetries and writings about the nation of Israel. And that's what this book of Jasher is making reference to. 2 Samuel 1:18. I did write myself a note. 2 Samuel 1:18. Jasher is referred to in several different books of the Bible as being a book at the time, and it was recorded down. So it didn't just happen here. Didn't just happen one time. It was recorded in Jewish history. So the sun stood still in the midst of heaven. The sun stopped and locked in place in the midst of heaven and hasted not to go down about a whole day. We'd already been through the whole day, and the sun was about to descend, and it stayed up another whole day, almost an entire whole day. We find one other time in history in which the sun stopped at the Lord, not like this, not for this much, but over I've got here 2 Kings chapter 20. Hezekiah was the king, and he was dying and going to die. And Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, it's quoted in the 38th chapter of Isaiah and 2 chapter of Kings. Isaiah went to Hezekiah and says, you're going to die. Get ready. Get your affairs in order. You're going to die. Hezekiah started praying to the Lord and said, Lord, I've been honorable to you. He was a good king, and I've been honorable to you. I've worshipped you. Please give me more time. And he said he wept openly, and the Lord heard his prayers. And the Lord sent back to Isaiah and says, I'm going to give you 15 more years. I'll give you 15 more years. And Hezekiah looked at Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, and says, can I have a sign? You know, we all want a sign from heaven. Can I have a sign that the Lord's going to let me live 15 more years? And he said, yeah, which do you want? I can make the sun go forward 10 degrees, or I can make it go back 10 degrees. And Hezekiah said, well, everybody knows the sun goes forward. All we got to do is wait, 40 minutes. That's 10 degrees in a 360-degree circle. All we got 40 minutes, and we can see the sun go forward. You can do that. He said, nobody can make it go backwards. And Isaiah said, the Lord can. And they sit there and watched, and it said on the sundial there, you saw the shadows go back 10 degrees, about 40 minutes. It turned the earth back. Twice we've had this done. It wasn't just done here, but here it was an entire whole day where the Lord stopped the sun. Stopped the sun, and it let him go after the enemy and flee after him. There was no day like it before or after it. Verse 16, but these five kings, the actual kings themselves, they were together and they fled and hid out in a cave. Joshua's men says, we've got the kings cornered, but they've run into a cave. He said, put rocks over the cave. I can't get there right now. Put rocks over the cave, seal it up, and then y'all chase the enemies down and kill them. So they did. So they sealed it over. Verse 18, he said, roll great stones over it and then keep them, but don't stay. You keep pursuing the enemy. And they pursued the enemy until the next day when Joshua comes, verse 22, and he said, open the mouth of the cave, brings out the five kings. Again, this is one of those things that seems rough, I guess, tough to live with. He says, take the five kings, and he says, I want all of you, my men, take those kings, put your foot on their throat. Get them on the ground, put the foot on their throat, and hold them down. And Joshua went through and slayed them, killed each one of them, struck them with his sword, and killed them, and hung their bodies up in a tree until nighttime. Don't feel sorry for the Canaanites. They were not good people. They were enemies and enemies of the Lord, and they were great, immoral people. Verse 24, it says, come, put your feet on the necks of these kings. And he goes, verse 26, and afterward Joshua smote them, slew them, and hung them on a tree, hung them on five trees, and they were hanging until the evening. This is the day the sun stood still for the Lord to help his people. And it's a great history story, but there's also some things in here for us. Number one, we pray all the time to the Lord to help us. I say, Lord, be with me today, you know, and those type of things. Things that you should do, but the Lord is with you most every day. Sometimes we fail because we don't pray big enough. Joshua prayed big. Lord, make the sun stop. And the sun stopped. Brother Kenny started off saying, you know, the fervent righteous prayer of the fervent prayer of a righteous man, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And it does. We got a lot of righteous people that could be praying. Brother King talked earlier about the problems of our country. We can help solve the problems of our country if we'll pray. You think, well, that's out of my control. I have no control over that. Yeah, you do. You have a lot of control over that. Think big and pray big. And go to work. You go to work doing your own thing. We talk about, Brother King in his prayer said, talk about, start with our own homes. And that's where you start. Over in Malachi 2 and 15, the Lord says, I want godly offspring come from godly parents out of godly homes. And that's where we start. We pray big. We do what the Lord told us to do because there's great blessings in coming to the Lord. He said, keep yourself separate from this type of activity in the world. We've got all sorts of problems on the internet, on TVs, on movies, on the behaviors and rulings of our courts that go against some of what ought to be law, our moral laws. We've got all sorts of laws. Just because there's a law that's allowed doesn't mean you have to follow it. The laws were allowed in Egypt, and the Lord said, don't follow their ordinances. Same way it was in Canaan. Keep yourselves separate and apart. We get ourselves in trouble when we allow ourselves to be influenced and intermingled by the laws of the world. We follow the laws of the Lord, and he says, he'll bless you. He'll bless us. But we need to pray. We need to pray big. We need to ask for the Lord's blessings. We got problems today, and it's important what we do with our kids. It's important that what we let them see on the internet, what we let them see on TV, what we let them see in the movies. Those are important, that we monitor that, that we watch it. It's important that we teach them the truth. It's important that you bring them to church. It's important that they learn what's in this book, what this book's all about. It's easy to go over to the dark side, as they say in the movies, you know, the dark side of the force. That's easy because it's attractive, and a lot of people are attracted. A lot of us have families and friends that get out in the world, and they get attracted to that. And when we do, we're falling into the trends and the, you know, and the moralities of the Canaanites and the Egyptians. And the Lord says, that's defiling me, and that's defiling my land. I'm not talking about eternal salvation. We've got a lot of good people that get themselves in trouble. We see that even in the Bible, and they're still good people. A lot of good kings like King Solomon. He let himself get into that pagan worship because he let himself get trapped up in that because a lot of people didn't do what the Lord told them to do and get rid of those people so they wouldn't influence them. every time it says Solomon allowed himself to get into those pagan worship services toward the end of his life. Good man, we know he went to heaven, but he lost some of the Lord's blessings that the Lord gives us in a timely fashion. It's the same way with us. The Lord will bless us day to day in our lives if we follow his ordinances, keep ourselves separate and apart from the things of the world. You bless me with your kind attention, and my prayer is that the Lord will richly bless each of you.